Let's go ahead and get started. We passed out some material this morning. Oh, here, let's hand out one more. Hand out that one. This next sheet that's coming around is really a corker. The Marine Corps, every 6 months, would evaluate its officers and its non-commissioned officers, NCOs. And every 6 months, or every change of duty station, or you change your reporting senior, then you're, when that was about to take place, when a change was about to take place, then your reporting senior of that time would fill out an evaluation of you. And they do this, of course, in all the branches of the armed service. And the thing that's coming back now is the system, or the terms by which they evaluate your performance. And so I'd like to, we're passing that one out now. It's just called the, what's it called, evaluation?
Evaluating.
Yeah, evaluating. Let me see if I can find my own copy up here. And I'd like to, I'd just like to hit that a little bit, and then we're going to jump into something completely different. But there are a couple of things I'm going to hit just lightly here, and then we'll get into the main topic for the morning is the ministry mentality. That's what I really want to hit on. Did you receive a handout called Management? It's about a four-page handout called Management.
No.
You didn't get that one? You didn't. Here it is. Let's hand that one out. And here again, being the great plagiarist, this thing of management, this is about 25% mine and about 75% Lauren Sanney. So you know at least 75% of it is pretty good. I had the distinguished privilege of being at Glen Eyrie one time for a manager's, they called it a supervisor's workshop. In other words, those who are supervising other staff personnel were invited to come from the Western Division, and Lauren Sanney spent a couple of days with us on management. And then Scotty spent a couple of days on training and self-development and this type of thing and vision. Walt Hendrickson came in and just blew us right out the wall on this thing about training people. Oh, good. Now, he had about 2 days with us. And some of the best stuff I'd ever heard, just really helpful to us. Well, anyway, I took pretty good notes on Lauren's talks. And what I've done here is I've condensed what he has said and just picked out the highlights or the things that really encapsulize the concepts that he communicated. And then I've stuck in a couple other little practical things on this paper called Management. To my knowledge, there is no tape on that. It's just some notes that he gave from a lecture. Now, what we're going to do, gang, good or bad, or good, bad, or green here, what we're going to do is on this management sheet is that I am going to cover that today with the gang that I eat lunch with. Don't we, what the team leaders are like? And if you got some points for clarification or something like that, what I would like for you to do is to read through it, and if you've got some points that you'd like to discuss, then check with the guy that's your team leader here, and he ought to. We're going to cover it. The reason I'm doing that is because we're pressed for time. And another thing is I feel like it's most pertinent for the guy who's actually supervising and helping other people in our ministry. And so for that reason, I don't think it would be really pertinent for all of you here. But well, we'll cover it at lunch. And if you've got a question, as you read through it, then you can get with a team leader. Well, one thing I did want to cover is over on page 3, this thing of evaluation. I feel this is very important. On page 3, Roman numeral 4, the topic, evaluation. Now, by the way, gang, let me show you a little anachronism here. In management, particularly management by objectives, By the way, that's a pretty good book. Managing for Results by Peter Drucker is a pretty good book on that. I don't think I'd recommend it unless you're getting into managing and you got quite a few things going. But see, one of these days, like Scotty mentions, and several other people have already mentioned, one of these days you're going to have to learn how to manage. For instance, wives are, generally speaking, just through necessity, become fantastic managers. You ever think about that? You know, as far as grocery shopping, house cleaning, clothes washing, child care, money management, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They've become fantastic managers through necessity. And you're going to have to become that way yourself eventually as your responsibilities increase. But, I'm sorry? Managing for Results, Peter Drucker. No. Managing for Results, Peter Drucker. The concept that he really talks about in there is management by objectives. For instance, at the Glen, just to give you an idea, Lauren comes in, he says, you know, I don't care what time your secretaries come to work. What I want you to do is get this amount of work done. The objective is to get the job done, not to spend 8 hours. And so one girl, Millie Hopkins, an old boy, she is on fire in the morning, so she comes in about 7:45, and man, she's just roaring. Dolores Preble, you know, she doesn't even wake up by 11. And so she roars in about 8:45, you know, and stumbles in, and you know. But, you know, she'll work about 5:30, 4 to 6. Because that's what best suits her. That's when she gets the most of her work done. Well, if that's when she gets the most of her work done, why don't you let her work then? What's so holy about working from 8 to 5? And so managing by objectives. What gets the job done? And let's do that. Now, sometimes, you know, if you were running an assembly line, that wouldn't work. You know, here's a guy putting the bolt on. He goes to the next guy. He hadn't showed up yet, and he hasn't shown up. And so, you know, so his whole thing falls to pieces. So I know there are exceptions to that. But we're, in our work, basically speaking, you can adapt the job to yourself and when you function the best and get the most done if you'll adapt it to your own self and run the thing by the objective, not by a schedule or something like that. I know some people in Christian work who violently disagree with this concept of management by objectives. So, you know, I'm not selling it to you as gospel because it is not in the scriptures per se. As far as, you know, being very definitely spelled out, there's no other way. But, well, anyway, I didn't want to get into that. I wanted to get into this thing of evaluation in Roman numeral 4. And, of course, in evaluation, your principle is always excellence. Your objective is always, always excellence. Now, the reason you evaluate is so that you can replan. And what you do is you go out and you'll plan, okay, in a gang, what do you think we ought to do, and what do you feel like the Lord wants us to do this quarter? And so you plan. And then you think, okay, now let's get organized. Who's going to do what? And who's going to be responsible and so forth? So you get organized. And then you think, well, let's see now. Who's going to do what here? So then you as an individual, you have to lead this thing. And at the end of the first quarter, you sit down and think, well, how are we doing? And you evaluate it. And as a result of your evaluation, you go back up here and think, well, maybe we ought to change a few things. And you replan. And then you know what you do? Then you organize to get the new plan done. Then you lead the new organization. And then after a while, you sit down and you think, how are we doing? And you evaluate. And after that, you go back up and you make some more plans. And gang, that's how it goes. Plan, organize, lead, evaluate. Plan, organize, lead, evaluate. That's how it goes. And we generally do this on a quarterly basis as a gang. Now, I'll get some time with the guys individually, the dorm leaders, and do this. Well, it depends on the situation, but we might do this 2 or 3 weeks in a row in our man-to-man time, just trying to get the guy headed in the right direction. And here again, always let him determine the plan. Now, he's the guy that's got to die for it. I mean, if the plane flies or crashes, he's the pilot, not me. I'm not in that thing, so I want it to be his plan. And that's why it may take 2 or 3 weeks. I could walk out with a guy saying, listen, Dave, I've had 4 or 5 years of experience in this business. I've been in so many dorms. I've been in more dorms than you've seen. Now, listen, here's the way you do this thing. La, 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 la. And say, here, go do that. But that's my plan. It's not his. And it's more important for me to take 3 or 4 weeks until it's his plan than it is for me to just give him something. Let me give you another little thing while we're on this. There's my chart. And that is a little anachronism, OATS. How do you spell OATS? O-A-T-S? A little slow this morning, gang. OATS. Okay. What is my objective? A. What activities will help me accomplish that? Or activities. But what's going to... Okay, my objective is to lead 10 people to Christ this year in dorm A. Okay, good objective. What are you going to do that? Well, activities... Well, I'm going to pray. Well, that's all right. Pray, good deal. What else are you going to do? Well, I'm going to witness. Oh, witness, okay, that's good activity. Yeah. And so forth. And then you come to T, and that's time. Well, when are you going to pray? And so you write down the time. And so you think, well, now one of the activities we're going to have is an evangelistic rally. And we're going to bring in Max Barnett over to this campus, and old Max is going to lay the hot scoop on us and the hot word and everything and ask the guys, you know, we have an evangelistic rally. And, oh, well, when are we going to do this? Well, I don't know. Sometime it's quarter. Well, you might ought to put that down, you know. What am I going to do? I'm going to do an evangelistic rally. I'm going to witness in the dorms. We're going to pass out a survey this week. We're going to go by and collect the survey next week and talk to people individually. We're going to have an evangelistic film, The Return, narrated by Hal Lindsey or something, next Friday night. We're going to do that. And then 2 weeks from now, we're going to have an evangelistic popcorn thing, or pizza feed over at the house or something, and Max is going to be there and speak. And see, all you do is you sit there and think, now, what is our objective? Well, my objective is to lead 10 guys to Christ. Great. Well, let's put some feet to that thing, okay? Let's put some reality into that. And so we think, well, let's put some activities. Okay, great. Let's have the thing, the survey, and blah, 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 and the activities. Well, when are we going to do those things? Well, let's do them now. And you set all that down, okay? Then the S part is just, let's get together once in a while and, you know, seriously evaluate this thing. How are we doing? And, you know, you got to kind of do something with that, you know. You ever heard of an Odie? So you got to do something. So kind of got to hang that in there someplace. So, but that's another little, just a little management tool, you know, to help you. And by the way, gang, don't ever get over the fact that these are just tools. I mean, they're not law, and I'm not subject to that thing, but it does help me, and I'll use it. But your objectives, and let's list some activities that will help us to accomplish those objectives. When are we going to do those activities? And then let's get together before long and evaluate how we, you know, whether or not it really worked. And one thing, see, we do this. Every quarter, we sit down and say, now, we had this thing with Gene Warren and Max Barnett. Now, what did that do? And we evaluated whether it was good, bad, indifferent, if it helped us anyway, did it help us meet our objectives? And we sit down and evaluate everything we did that quarter and whether or not it helped. Yes?
How do you get a guy to see the difference between an activity and an objective? What
this
is an objective is an activity?
Yeah, it can be. Like he says, well, what's your objective? My objective is to read the Bible. Well, that's an activity. But see, I can live with that. I don't get too, that doesn't bother me too much. Because that's, but eventually, if like a guy on our team, see, if his objective is to do his reading program, well, then that becomes an objective, because I know that in order to do that, he's got to read 4 chapters a day to get through it. And his activity is to read 4 chapters. His objective is to read the Bible, or to complete the Bible, something like that. But once a guy gets on up on the core team level, I try to help him distinguish the two. And see, and a lot of times, see, your objective is to memorize, you know, it could be to memorize some verses, but an objective, and memorizing is an activity. An objective is to memorize 3 a week. That's a stated objective. Now you can see, you can measure that one. Now, on the back page on here, we've, on page 4 here, under planning, when you state an objective, it says the objective, and here's how you do it. You say to, action verb, to memorize, you know, an expected result. To memorize John chapter 2. Well, see, that's an expected result, and you can measure that. See? So when you set your objectives, and that's kind of how you do it. You go to, my objective is to, and then verb, and then result. To read the Bible. To memorize, you know, the key verses in each chapter analysis Bible study. See, that becomes an objective. And see, that's kind of my scripture memory program now, and that's where I am. I memorize the verses that I'm in my Bible study that are the key verses, the kind of the cornerstones in the Bible study. You know, like Titus chapter 1, verse 5 is key verse. For this reason I left you in Crete, that you might set in order what remains and appoint elders in every city as I directed you. That's a key verse in there. And then the key verse in kind of the last little section is it talks about the troublemakers. And I memorized verse 15 to kind of hang my head on it. It says, but those... oh, nuts. I just reviewed the thing 2 days ago, see. To the pure, all things are pure. But to those who are defiled and unbelieving, nothing is pure. But both their mind and their conscience are defiled. And that kind of hangs, that last little section kind of hangs in that verse. You know, and so I kind of memorized verse 15. And then 6, 7, 8, 9 describe this overseer that Titus is supposed to point in verse 5. So I memorized that, see. And you just kind of pick out the verses in this chapter that are the key, and you just memorize those, see. And Titus chapter 2, it's a special deal. The whole chapter is key. You memorize the whole chapter, you know, because it talks about, you know, but as you speak those things which are fitting for sound doctrine, older men are to be temperate, dignified, sensible. Then it goes to older women, then it goes to young men, then it goes to young women, then it goes to young men. Then it goes, now, by the way, Titus, this is the way you are. And it takes about the whole thing is wrapped up in the grace of God. Then he ends it by saying, you know, now, listen, speak these things with all authority. Don't let anybody disregard you. You know, you just memorize the whole chapter. But generally, my memorization at this point goes along with the Bible study. See? And so, but that's an objective for me. Memorize the key verses in the Bible study. Okay, under evaluation, people will do what you inspect. Well, that's the definition of evaluation. I got this from Lauren Sanney. You have evaluated when you have compared where you are with where you should be. Perfect. Let me give you a little thing on this. I discovered this one day, I was working with some guys and myself too. I was just kind of doing some thinking about my own self. Let me encourage you, gang, to really use your old brain housing group, okay? Use the old brain. So I sat down one day and I said, now where do I want to be in 3 years? I'd really like to be in Europe, but starting from scratch in about 3 years, I'd like to have about 5 DMs. I mean, good men that can reproduce. So that's a good deal. Okay. 5 disciple makers. And so, okay, now 5 disciple makers. Well, then I thought, well, how many disciples have become disciple makers? I mean, just across the board, you know, statistical analysis, how many, you know, through the years, disciples make disciple makers? Well, about, oh, I can't remember. I think it's about 2 out of 5. So about 40%. So how many disciples am I going to have to raise up to have this many? How many is it, 12 and a half, something like that? Is that right? 2 out of 5 become, is that 12 and a half? I don't know, I can't remember. So that means I got to produce 12 and a half D's, right? Is that right? If 2 out of 5? Okay. Well, then how many C's become D's? How many converts become disciples? I don't know. I bought 3 out of 5. So how many converts I got to have? And I don't know. How many is that? I forget. I had this all worked out. I don't know. I can't remember the figures. But anyway, that's X number of C's, okay? However many that be. And then I thought, okay, now how many hours of evangelism does it take to produce a convert? And I figured out about 10. About 10 hours of evangelism produced. And so I could figure out how many hours I was going to have to spend in evangelism that year to be where I'm going to be in 3 years with my disciple makers. That was extremely helpful to me. And I knew that if I was not out in those dorms witnessing 2 and 3 hours a week or 2 and 3 hours a day, whatever the situation may be, that's a dream to me. And so I just said, I figured that out. If this is where I want to be, then what must I be doing right now today? Or I am simply blowing smoke in the wind. Now, really help me. You have evaluated when you have compared where you are with where you should be. Now, let's say that our objective is to... now, by the way, these statistics may not be the case for you guys. I mean, those are just some... And they're 2 or 3 years old. I think somebody did an analysis with the statistics here years ago in the Navigators, and they came up with about that. And I think they came out of the Northern Division, so that may not be true in the other division. But it gave me something to go with. It gave me a plan. It really helped me to think, you know, that if I want 5 DMs, I better be out there hot witnessing. Because it might take 40 or 50 converts to get those guys. See what I mean? and 40 or 50 converts in a year, you're going to have to burn some asphalt. Okay, well, let me cover a few things then. Okay, compare where you are with where you should be and have analyzed the variance. People, here's a very critical one. People will do what you inspect. Therefore, be very careful what you inspect because it is what they will do. The next statement, what you evaluate is powerful. Think through on what you are evaluating, what you are inspecting. It leaves an impression in his mind as to what is important. Now let me share a little thing I learned from Dwight Hill. As a result of getting some time with Dwight and one of the guys that Dwight really helped, a guy by the name of Hal Jensen, who has the work down in New Mexico now. Hal's a good man. And yeah, there's a lot of good people in this world. There's some just good people. I got some time with Hal and Dwight and some of these guys, and I learned, as a result of that, when I get time with my guy, the first question I ask him is, how you feel? You know why I ask him that? Because I want to implant within their thinking that one of the primary things that I'm concerned with, the thing that I'm really concerned about, is the guy's his own health, and does he feel good, and how is he doing just as a person? And he'll say, inevitably, you know, I'm pretty good. And so I'll probe a little bit. And I'll say, well, you getting plenty of sleep? And he said, I've been averaging probably seven and a half this week, doing pretty good. I said, that's good. By the way, how about eating? You've been catching your meals regular, you know, and this type of thing? Yeah, I got a meal ticket this quarter, and I'm on a 15-meal plan, and I eat two meals a day, and on the weekends, it's been pretty good. And if a guy's living in an apartment, I say, you've been eating pretty good? He said, yeah. I said, what'd you have for breakfast this morning? And he says, Rice Krispies with, rotten banana. I said, I'm like, getting that. But see, I'm concerned about that, and that's the first thing I talk with the guy about. You know why? Because to me, that's the most important thing. If the guy is killing himself physically, should I expect the guy to be get up and having a very sweet time of fellowship with the Lord, and a guy feels like a death warmed over? Oh man, you're dreaming. When you're sick, you got a bad cold, or you got the flu, don't you just love to lay there in bed and get time with the Lord? I don't want to get time with anybody. It's agony feeding and pray. Anyway, so this is important to me, see? That's why I evaluate that first. How you feel? You've been getting sleep. How about eating? Well, I've been doing pretty good. Okay, how about exercise? How have you been doing exercise-wise? Well, pretty good. I'm running every night for a couple of miles. That's a good deal, By the way, Scott loves to play basketball. I said, by the way, you've been playing any basketball? Well, guys, see, because I want him to know that the thing I'm not just concerned about is how is your Bible studying. You memorize any verses, and I don't want the guy to think that that's what's the critical thing to me. But boy, gang, you walk up to you guys and say, well, how's it going? Well, pretty good. How are your guys? And immediately you have communicated to him the thing that's really important is his ministry. You've just communicated that to him loud and clear. That's very dangerous. Okay, so when you evaluate a guy, be sure that you ask him. The next thing I'll get into, are your studies? How's it going? Boy, how's that history test last week? Oh, man, I flagged that thing. Is that right? What happened? Well, I don't know. I got behind on my studies at certain centers. We'll talk about that a little while. But see, I evaluate things, way on down the line. I'll ask him, say, by the way, how's the Bible study? Now, we will get to that. We'll talk about that. But I try to evaluate the guy in light of what I feel is really important to the guy. And here again, gang, I am going for the long haul. We're going for the long haul. I want to see the guy be a winner in life. I don't want just to use him to pad my ministry statistics. We're going for the long haul. Now, here again, I was sharing this with somebody. I don't know, but when I was just out as a contact point, I'm a fresh young buck out to prove myself and all this type of stuff, then it was a little more important to me and a little more crucial to me that the ministry statistics look pretty good. By the way, let me just share something with you. God's training program. Oh, horrible. You know what, my first year, there were five categories. How many converts? And that year they went in the 1st of April instead of 1st of June. And there are five categories. How many converts? How many disciples? How many disciple makers? then two or three others, you know. But you know what my, how many, one was how many potential staff people do you have, you know, this type of thing. And you know what my statistics were that year? This is horrible. And I mailed it in. Oh. You know, here I was this giant hot shot butt running out here, you know. And I've sent in 5 zeros. Oh, man, what a wife that God's training program. Well, I needed it. He knew it. I hated it, but he knew it. And he did it. But see now, but see, and I think for all those first years, you know, guy being a convert and a guy kind of being in the TMS, you know, I can say, man, we got 6 guys in TMS. So we got 2 Bible studies going, there's 8 guys. You know, that would be important to me. But somehow, you know, I've kind of been through that, I guess, or something. Somehow, after you kind of get through the Mickey Mouse, and you see that God will use you, and he does love you, and he is faithful to you, and this type of thing, and God's hand is on you, then after you see that, that's a very important breakthrough. But after you see that, then after a while, you don't care if a guy's memorizing TMS or not. What you're looking for, does the guy love God, and is he fellowshipping with God, and is he growing? That's the thing that's important. And he already comes through and he says, hey, by the way, how many guys you have memorizing the TMS? And I say, man, I don't know. Well, how many you guys got Bible study? Well, about 100, I guess. See, that's not important. But you kind of have to go through a little, you know, Leroy describes it this way. You know, here's an hourglass. And, well, here's something like an hourglass. You know, and so a guy kind of has to need to kind of go through this little bitty narrow bottleneck here. He's kind of... And up in here, you know, he's roaring around, and then he kind of goes through this, you know, and then he's out doing all these other activities, but, you know, his objectives and things are all different now. Maybe the same activities, he's out witnessing, evangelizing, he's following up guys and all this type of thing, but after he goes through this little bottleneck, he's doing the same activities, but he's a different mentality, different objectives, different, you know, philosophy, the whole bit. Now he's looking for the long haul. He's looking for the godly man. He's looking for guys to get things deep in their life. He didn't care about methods and, you know, stuff like that, statistics and stuff like that. But every guy has to go through this little bottleneck there. You know, eventually you're going to have to go through that. Now, I'm not talking about a negative attitude. My RD comes through and he says, by the way, how many guys you got in the TMS? I don't say, oh, that's really important to you, huh? Don't get on the negative attitude bit. By the way, I've never had my RD ask me that. By the way, do you know when I was with Leroy, he never one single time in 2.5 years of being Leroy, he never one single time asked me how my verses were. Can you believe that? This guy's training me, you know, and the navigators. I walked into his door that first night in Colorado Springs, snowing outside like, you know, oh, get out, and I walked in fear and trembling. I just knew I was going to walk in, he's going to say, okay, give me the 3. And, you know, in 2.5 years, that guy never asked me about my verses. You know why? That wasn't critical to him. The thing that was critical to him, he told me one time, he said, you know, Chuck, you know what I'm really looking for? I'm looking for men who really have their heart in the game. Well, that spells volumes to me. But gang, be careful how you evaluate people because it dictates to them what's really crucial to you. And go for the long haul, okay? Now, let me show you just one other thing we do. It helps us to evaluate. And let's draw your ministry triangle, okay? And let's list your DMs. And your D's, and your young Christians, and maybe your converts, or something like that, okay? Well, let's just lump these. Young Christians and your converts, we'll lump that, D's and DM, and then let's put LDMs. Leaders of Disciple Makers. I'm a dorm leaders. Leaders of Disciple Makers. Okay, so I get together with this guy, and I say, okay, how many people you got involved in your dorm? So he says, well, I don't know, some number. And so we plot that out on graph paper, and so he'll say, well, there's one LDM, that's myself. I got 4 disciple makers. Okay, 4 disciple makers. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. And I've got each disciple maker's got a couple of disciples, so we got 8. Okay. Okay, got 8 of those. Okay. How many young Christians and converts you guys got around? Well, each of these guys is kind of working... we've got 6, okay? Well, let's draw that. So we draw this triangle. And that's what his ministry looks like, okay? And we'll draw these things across here like this, you know. And something like that. And then we'll back off and we look at that and they say, well, Bill, does that look healthy? And he says, well, no, not too much. And you know, I have drawn triangles look like this. Horrible. They look like this. That's bad. You know, because of, you know, the one of the philosophies under which we operate is broad base. Let me show you what I mean. If this system, if this thing is really working, then probably as these guys are working and these guys are working, this guy's working, your triangle will probably look some, you know, maybe it'll look more like an isosceles or something like that. Did you catch that word or something? It'll probably look something more like this, you know. And you've got to keep, basically as a ministry philosophy, you've got to keep a broad base. Always be reaching out to people. You guys ought to be in contact with just a legion of non-Christians. Man, you have non-Christians all over that place that you know and buddies with, and you'll get pizza with and stuff like this. And just all guys all over those dorms and things that you're just buddies with. But generally speaking, you need to keep kind of a broad base. And you can draw a triangle sometimes like that on a graph, and you can evaluate where you're weak and where you're strong and where you need to go in that dorm. And if you got a lot of DMs, this type of thing, and you're kind of heavy at the top, you know what you need to do? Well, boy, gang, I tell you, you guys graduate, we're going to be hanging high and dry. We need to reach out to more people. We're becoming ingrown. We're just a bunch of disciples and guys. Well, it looks like we're just fellowshipping with ourselves. And it looks like, man, we need to reach out to some new blood here. We're becoming ingrown. And then if your ministry looks like this, you know, and I've had them look like this. And you think, you know, we got one guy up here and about three guys here, it looked like this. Let me draw it again. It looked like this. Now, that's how Dave Webster's looked this year, because, man, they got out there and hit it like crazy, and all of a sudden they had about 12 converts and about another 25 people in Bible study. And they had about a couple of DMs and three or four disciples. Man, they had people out the ear. And so what Dave looked at that and he said, well, what I need to do is that we need to now begin to concentrate on building. And see, when you draw it out like that, all of a sudden, good night, you know what we need to do? It becomes very clear. And so sometimes it's good to take your piece of graph paper and take your profiles and evaluate where your people stand and kind of where they are maturity-wise, and then draw it out on a piece of paper and take a look at what you got. That's very helpful sometimes. Now, the reason I went ahead and shared that section with everybody is because I wanted to get that concept about, boy, be careful how you evaluate, because most of you are meeting with somebody else. And I wanted to get this across to you, because most of you, you know, are involved in a deal like that, in a little ministry. Now, let me just share with you about this Marine Corps evaluation thing, okay? I love the Corps. You got to love it. And let me just read down through some of these character traits here that are discussed. To what extent has he exhibited the following? Endurance. Physical and mental ability for carrying on under fatiguing conditions. Several times this year we'd go and work at a ranch and we'd do things like this. And by the way, gang, I'll get into this in a few minutes, but you know, the night before I came here, due to some interruptions in my schedule and several other things, I did most of this the night before I left. And there were nine people. I asked one person to come down to my office and help me do some typing because I had a tremendous amount to do. She said, okay, I will. And then she had some friends come in from up at Sacramento and some friends of hers. And she said, listen, you go do the typing. I'll be there when I get through this dinner engagement. So the other girl came down, and then the first girl that I'd asked came down about 10, down to my office downtown. But you know, gang, that some of the guys knew I was going to be down there working, and I was a little bit behind. And you know that we had nine people down at that office helping me get ready. Do you know when we finished? At 9 o'clock the next morning. Nine people, on their own initiative and everything else, came down and says, "Listen, you got to get this stuff done. What can we do?" So a couple of guys ran out of stuff to do about 1 o'clock in the morning. They were collating and duplicating all this stuff, and they got caught up. And so they came up and says, "Let me see the keys to your car." I said, well, they're over there on the counter. What do you need my car for? He said, well, don't worry about it. So you know what they did at 1 o'clock in the morning? They went out and washed my car and washed off the motor, vacuumed it out, and got it all ready to go the next day. I didn't have to say anything to those guys. But gang, how do you function when it's just you're so joking tired you could drop? How do you function then? Are you complaining? Are you negative? Or you say, well, man, I'm so tired, I don't know if I can take another step, but let's go. The verse I love to death on this thing is Judges 8:4. Oh, good. let me just read this with you. I'll give you a little background. Well, nuts. We'll get into this in ministry mentality in a few minutes. Personal appearance. The trait of habitually appearing neat, smart, and well-groomed in uniform or civilian attire. Now, when I went to the University of California, Irvine, I saw all these hippies and long hairs out there, and I thought, ah, the key is identity. And so I grew a beard, you know, it's kind of a fuzzy-looking thing. I'd give me an old ragged pair of blue jeans that had the back pocket about half torn off, and I had a shirt that I'd painted in. And it had pink paint, just a blazing pink paint that kind of dribbled right down. I must look like a scarecrow out there. But anyway, I'd go out on the campus, you know, with my old pair of tennis shoes, and the heel was falling off low, you know, I mean, just the sole was coming out, you know, my tennis shoes. I'd flop out the head, gang, how you do? And I thought, man, I'm really with it. Well, every time I walk out the door, my wife would just cringe. And then occasionally, just by sheer necessity, I'd have to stop by some business establishment, the bank or the grocery store, and pick up something on the way home. You ain't wrong. I'd walk in, you know. And I knew the bank president personally. His son and his daughter were involved in the Navigator ministry in another state, and son-in-law and daughter. And I walked in and I said, how you doing, Mr. Fowler? I look like a bum, you know. He's this bank president, stage sharp, you know. And I'm the big nav rep, you know. Good grief, gazamas. Well, anyway, my wife finally got through to me on that. And since that time, I have tried to dress and appear as someone who is sharp and who's looking for men who are sharp. You know, I want to recruit the type of guys, a certain type of guy, and so I try to look that way. And see, when I walk out on the campus, I don't see people dressed like this on the campus. You know, they're shuffling along, they're cut off jeans and t-shirts and you know, muscle shirts, whatever they call those things, you know, they kind of, but I don't. And they're barefooted or got on their shower tongs or you know what. But I don't look that way. I don't look that way. And as, you know, if you're a college student, maybe that's one thing. But see, I'm 33 years old out there. I'm not a college student. I am a businessman. And so I go out to looking like that. And I try to look pretty sharp. And generally speaking, it's not a bad idea. See, now I could come up here and speak to you guys. I could have on a pair of blue jeans and my tennis shoes, and you would totally accept me, not give it a second thought. Probably. Some of you might. But see, generally speaking, as a guideline, and I learned this from Leroy, I generally overdress just a little bit. I'd rather be overdressed than underdressed. Because you know why? Because 1 Samuel 16:7 is in the Bible. Look not on his countenance. Men don't look at that, Samuel. Or on the height of his stature, because I refuse him. For the Lord seeth not as man seeth. Man looks on the outward appearance. That's right, he does. But the Lord looks on the heart. But man looks on the outward appearance. And so how do you look out externally? I mean, when you go into a church on Sunday morning or Sunday night, you know, how do you look? Military presence. We have a guy at our campus, he's kind of shuffles, you know, he's a faculty member and he's a good man, he loves God, and we've got some good faculty members out there. But this guy, when he walks, he just kind of shuffles, you know. And you know, one day, I love the guy, I said, you know, have you ever paid attention to the way you walk? And we were walking along talking, you know, just kind of doing that then, you know. And we were walking in some sandy soil, and I said, look, just, you know, can we look at your footprints? And so we turned around, and sure enough, you know, one was kind of sling out like this, you know, and one would sling, and I said, you see that right there? I said, let me help you something here. In the Marine Corps, and I showed him how they were taught to walk in the Marine Corps. And I said, easy. Don't get carried away here. So I showed this guy, you know, and this guy's a doctor. You know, this guy's a doctor in his field, a sharp guy. But I want to help the guy in his life. I'm not just interested in if he's doing good into the Bible study. Oh, great. I want to help the guy in his life. And so we're walking along. I said, you know, the thing that we need to work on is just keep in mind the term bearing. And I said, hold your shoulders back a little bit. Keep your head up. And I don't mean throw your chest out like you're marching and be rigid. I'm not getting that tight. But I say, keep your shoulders up and walk. And I'll often practice this myself. I'll walk down that hallway and I'll think, okay, I'll practice. And all I do is I just keep myself straight. And I don't, you know, get rigid or anything, but I just walk, practicing kind of my shoulders and back a little bit, bearing. And see, a lot of times when I walk down the aisle of a church, you know, that's a good, you know, it's kind of outlined and everything, and it's kind of like a drill field or something, you know, you walk down the aisle. And I just practice it, you know, I just walk and make sure and concentrate on my walking, you know, how am I doing, you know, I trip over the cord and fall. But, you know, that's something to work on. I learned a great lesson on that. People look on the outward appearance, how you look. It took me 3 years to learn that. Attention to duty. Are you industrious? The trait of working thoroughly and conscientiously. Industrious. Gang, when the prof says, okay, now we're going to have a term paper due 3 months, when do you start on it? My RD calls and says, now listen, we got this, I want you to come up with a 3-year plan for your area. Now, with what mental framework do I attack that? Am I industrious? Do I try to do a thorough, conscientious job on that? Or do I just kind of slide it through and try to get something done? Is it habitually true of you that you are an industrious individual? Attention to duty. Okay, the next one is cooperation. The faculty of working in harmony with others, both military and civilian. Well, you know, I never want to become the type of guy that in the meeting, everybody dreads to bring up this subject because they know how I'm going to react. Isn't that terrible? Be known as a guy that people can talk to and discuss things with and cooperates and understands and this type of thing. The next one is initiative. This is a good one. The trait of taking necessary or appropriate action on your own responsibility. And I love to see this in guys. This is why I give guys the job and don't tell them how to do it. I want to develop initiative in them. Very critical. If a guy is not exercising initiative in college, he will not exercise it after he graduates. Most likely. I don't want to put an absolute on that. But if your guy, you know, you expect this guy to go out and do a good ministry, or he's going to go, he and Sue just got married and they're going over here to Fresno in some place and live. And if you have not trained Fred to be a guy of initiative in San Luis Obispo, then the possibilities are very high that when he gets to Fresno, he will not take the initiative and go out and reach some guys in his neighborhood or get a small group going in his church or anything like that. He will not take the initiative unless you train him to be that way. Judgment, the ability to think clearly and arrive at logical conclusions. And I think inherent in this is making good observations and seeing the facts. Presence of mind, the ability to think and act promptly and effectively in an unexpected emergency under great strain. One time at Maranatha Bible Camp, the navigators had a summer training program, and this guy was out mowing the lawn, and he ran over his foot. And, of course, you know, he ripped his shoe leather, went roaring and flying everywhere, and he fell in. Giant agony, and blood was flowing, you know. And so people came roaring up there, and of course, Dr. Olson, who runs the camp, just a godly man, was over quite close, and so he came over, and everybody says, you know, get a phone, you know, and everybody, and Dr. Olson says, he says, go get my car. And this guy said, and he rolled off, and his car was, he got the car and brought it over here, and Dr. Olson says, put him in the back seat. So he put him in, and he drove down, took him to the doctor, stitched up his toes, and that's done, brought the guy back, he's okay. Giant emergency, you know, how you just completely space out, become completely unzipped, you know, what do you do, you know? You know, just presence of mind, you know. Okay. Force. And boy, this is a good one. Force. The faculty of carrying out with energy and resolution that which is believed to be reasonable, right, or duty. And we'll get into that a little bit in the lessons learned section. But gang, basically, if it is right, it is right. And we will do it, God being my helper. The ability to stick with it, if it is right, and God being my helper, we will do it. Well, if you do that, I'm sorry to say that we cannot continue to support your ministry then. Thank you. But God being my helper, we will do what I believe is right. The ability under strain or stress to do with all your heart what you believe is right. The ability under strain or stress to do with all your heart what you believe is right. Resolute. And gang, I really believe, as I thought about it, that this could very well be one of the very essentials of leadership. Resolute. This ability to function and stay on target with your convictions in the midst of strain and opposition. Leadership. The capacity to direct, control, and influence others and still maintain high morale. In other words, you're not a dictator. You're getting things done, but the gang is really with you in heart. They're with you, and you're getting things done together. Loyalty. The quality of rendering faithful and willing service, unswerving allegiance under any and all circumstances. I think if there's any characteristic that stands out so vividly in my mind, when I think about Roberta, our girls worker, it would be this characteristic of loyalty. She has thrown in the towel. She is with us heart and soul. Man, I tell you, if anybody jumps on me, she is the first one to my defense. She is loyal and just tremendously with us in heart. She is so with us, really loyal. And boy, gang, let me tell you, you do not know how important that is to a leader. You want to grab the door and just... But you do not know how critical it is to a leader for your men to be loyal to you. But the guy's trying with all his heart to do the will of God, and you're sniping at him, and you know, and you're kind of with him a little bit here, and then he does something wrong, you criticize this, and you think, well, you know, if this guy was up here, and well, that just that erodes the guy like cancer. But if he senses it, you're really with him. Oh, you're with him. Let me give you a couple of verses on that, just out of the blue here. Leroy gave it to me when I was his assistant. He was driving down the road one day, and he said, let me share a couple of verses with you, Chuck, baby. And he did. 1 Samuel 18:5, and Saul went out whithersoever. David went out. I'll get it right in a minute. And David went out whithersoever Saul sent him, and behaved himself wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of Saul's servant, in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. And so Leo asked me, he said, would you say that Saul was a good commander, good man? I mean, he'd already tried to kill him twice. Do you think he's a good man? Well, no, he's not too good of a man. But what was David's response to him? Well, he went out wherever Saul sent him, behaved himself wisely. And he said, Chuck, sometimes as an assistant, you may not agree with me as a person. But what you've got to do is remain a loyal and behave yourself wisely and do what I've asked you to do, although you disagree with me. He said, if a guy is a bad leader, if he's a bad leader, still you should behave yourself wisely and do what he asks you to do because he's your leader. Okay, let me give you another verse. So he gave me, is it 1 Chronicles 7:14, where Jonathan said to the young man that bare his armor, 14:6? 1 Chronicles 14:6? 1 Samuel 14:6. Okay, 1 Samuel 14:6 and 7. And Jonathan said to the young man that bare his armor, come and let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised, and maybe that the Lord will work for us. There's no restraint to the Lord to say by many or by few. And so, and Jonathan, his armor bearer, said, are you out of your head? See, now here's two guys, and there is a whole garrison. And so Jonathan says, hey, why don't you and I kind of walk out there and expose ourselves, and they'll come out and fight. Man, we'll just believe that God's given it to us, and we'll just wipe out the whole crew. You want to do that? Not really. But so, you know what Jonathan said? He said, turn thee, behold, I am with thee. He said, do all that is in your heart. Turn thee, behold, I am with thee, according to thy heart. And Leo said, sometimes you follow the guy, even if he's got a bad plan. So you follow him if he's a bad guy, or you follow him if he's got a bad plan. And I think that's very significant here as far as the guy being very... If you're on the team, gang, then be on the team. If you don't like the way things are going and you can't support the guy wholeheartedly, then get off. But don't ruin the atmosphere and the whole thing by your negative attitude and by your spirit. Your negative spirit and your negative attitude. If you can't be loyal to the guy and really with him, then get off. I really believe that. Just a couple of verses that Leroy shared with me. Personal relationships. The faculty for establishing and maintaining cordial relationships with military and civilian associates. And of course, in the ministry, this would be with pastors and other Christian workers, and maybe Campus Crusade or InterVarsity or the Navigators or some pastors downtown. It may be some other. It may be the Presbyterian Church. It may be the Assembly of God Youth Director or what it is. But the ability to really work in harmony with other people. You know, I really try to. Sometimes I really try. I'm not always good at this, but I try to see the ministry from God's perspective. And you know, somehow God doesn't paint my little Navigator ministry as kind of a good color, and this guy, well, it's kind of okay, but it's a little bit different shade. I don't think God paints it that way. I think God looks down and says, man, hang in there, buddy. You know, hey, you hanging there. You doing okay? Yeah, hanging there. He's just, man, the whole thing turns him on. And so why should I be in a different, this guy, man, Assembly of God. They don't even believe in the Nazarenes down here. They don't even believe in eternal security. What a bunch of, well, good night. The guys love Jesus and they're saved. They may not believe that they're going. You know, they may not believe that they can know they're saved, but they are saved. Now, I believe they know they're saved, but man, I have fantastic fellowship with those guys. So the ability to work in harmony, and personal relationships. Okay, and then economy and management, effective utilization of men, money, and material, and that's just being a good steward. Now, gang, let me point out one thing, and that is the fact that you know that these are pagans evaluating pagans. And do you not know that you are the servants of the living God? And yet sometimes, gang, in our ministry, this is one of the things that really gets to me. And I see guys go, I teach Sunday school, okay? And so there's a couple of guys that are in charge of preliminaries. Every morning, here it is. Well, let's say it's about 5 minutes late. And so the guy gets his guitar out, and he gets up there and he says, well, let's sing number six. Ding, ding, wait a minute. Ding, 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 ding. You know, go through that bit. Ding, ding. Okay, number six. What? Don't have the songbook. Okay, let's see. Pass out the song sheets. And so we kind of pass out the song sheets, you know. So he gets up and ding, ding, and nobody knows a thing or something. So well, let's write on the board here. So he writes about a third of it. And he says, well, that takes too long, you know. And so ding, ding. And I'm sitting there just corroding. Here is a bunch of pagans out saying, listen, if you're going to be in this Marine Corps, you're going to ship up or you're going to get out of here. You understand that? And we had a saying in our outfit. You know what it was? If you can't hack the program, then get out of the outfit. And we live that way. If you can't hack the program, then get out of the outfit. And these were the standards that we held up to guys. You will be this way. You will look sharp. You will act sharp. You will be tough. You will be hard. And you will win. Do you understand that? And you know what they did? They did that. And so we go into servants of the living God and we slop through a bunch of junk and say, well, you know, we're not under the law. We're just under grace. And God's love, and I hate it. I hate it with a passion. That the very idea that a guy would bring dishonor and blasphemy to the name of God and then call it, well, we're under God's love. That's sickening to me. And the non-Christian world, and I mean this, they wouldn't vomit on that. And I'll give you another clue. God wouldn't either. You know what Revelation says over here? You know, because you're lukewarm, I'll spew you out of my mouth. You know what that word spew means? If you'll check the margin of your New American Standard, it says literally vomit. And gang, sometimes the way that under the name of God we conduct our Christian work, it is sickening. It is sickening. And I am amazed that a pagan outfit can go out here and produce a sharp, effective machine of 186,000 men who are effective and have done a tremendous job for 176 years. And we can't do the same thing for the work of God when we're serving the living God who indwells us with His power and His Spirit. Boy, there's something wrong with our brains when we slide back into that sloppy, slop-it-through method. Oh. So, gang, keep your standards high. And these are just some of the things that you can use to evaluate yourself and the people with whom you're trying to minister. See, a lot of times I'll say, now who wants to take this? We've got a conference coming up. Who wants to run the conference? And some of that volunteer. Well, see, I don't think the guy can hack it. And so I won't get it to him. And so when I do delegate something to somebody, what I'm generally looking for is a man that I think can do an excellent job, but it will stretch him. It really will stretch him. And so that's one concept of delegation. Delegate that which will stretch the man. Another concept is don't do anything that you can get somebody else to do. And as far as typing or... see, for instance, we have a tape library. Well, I said, Pete Perkins does all that, see? And you know what Pete's doing? He's got old Rich Card and Doug Dree's doing it. Those are two guys in his core team. And so I said, now, Pete, you take care of the tape library. Okay, we got about 450 tapes or something like this. And I said, man, you take care of the tape library. And so Pete then will, he'll say, hey, Doug, what you doing next Saturday? Well, you know, I got some things, but hey, listen, can you take care of it? I want you to go by and put labels on all these tapes, type up the labels, organize the thing, write it in the notebook, blah, 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 blah. And he just delegates it to Doug. And so I just don't do anything that I can delegate to somebody else if I can get around it. And so here's another thing, gang. You know, I really believe that this is a byproduct of it, but those guys really feel like they're, you know, if they were not around, the whole thing would fall to pieces. And that's the way I want them to feel, because that's the way it is. It's not my ministry, and they're just kind of my little elves, you know, my helpers or something. Well, those guys are vital. And if they're not around the thing, if this guy leaves or quits or sloughs off, the ministry suffers. And I want a guy to realize that he is a valuable part of that. And I think delegation really helps him to feel that way. And, man, I don't do anything. Well, we'll be at a rally or something, and the guy said, hey, can we order some of those New American Standard Bibles? And I said, sure, man, we'll order them for you. And so anybody else want one? And so here's six, and here's four, and three. Okay, let's ski order those Bibles, will you? And that's it. That's as much thought as I give to it. So Ski gets a postcard out and writes, you know, and orders the Bibles. And that's just the way, I just don't do anything I don't have to do. That allows me some think time. I don't do a nickel dime. And I just delegate everything. I delegate some very important things. Yeah, I called him and said, listen, can you come out and speak? And I said, well, I'm not sure I can, but if I can, I'll have somebody out there. I said, okay, sure. Oh, man, he'll be a good man. Okay, okay. Hang up the phone. Hey, Doug, can you take that? Take what? Oh, I'll go out and speak at some, you know, you got the morning and evening service and lead a Sunday school class. You're kidding. No. Oh, man. Well, I don't know. Figure out something. You got it. And, you know, that's all of that, you know. But see, I won't give that to somebody I don't think you would do a good job. It's conscientious, it's industrious, and it'll do a good job. I won't do that. I'm very selective. This guy says, hey, I'd like to take that. I say, well, old Joe here, he needs the experience. Hey, Joe, you go do it, okay? And what I'm really saying is, well, I appreciate your volunteering. I like your volunteer spirit. I like that, but, you know, I don't think that you're geared for that right now. And I want Joe to do it. And so I'll just say, well, you know, I appreciate that. Well, let's see. Now, oh, okay, you're the guy. All right, Joe, it's your time. Stand tall, man. You got it. And I'll just lay it on him. That was a question.
You do something like that, let the fellows work on it, see if you have a problem with it, maybe you get to the point of failing. And yet, you know, if he does fail, it won't ruin his life. Do you go ahead and let him fail and learn from that, or do you pitch in?
No, I won't take it away from him unless it's extremely vital. And I've had cases like a Halloween party. You remember that thing Maxie came out? What a bummer. Oh. Disaster, you know. And I gave the responsibility to a guy for that thing at the beginning of school, around the middle of September, and this was the end of October. And I knew that thing was going to be a bummer. I knew it because I got with the guy and I said, listen, how's it going? He didn't have a program planned. He didn't have it organized. He didn't know who was going to be doing the publicity. He didn't know who was going to do the decoration, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Time kept getting tighter and tighter. And I said, well, you know, what's your thought? And he said, man, I don't know. Do you think we should do this? I said, Mark, you do it. I want you to make the decisions. Man, you can do it. I've got utmost confidence in you. You do it. And just keep me informed as to what you're doing. But I want you to make the decision. I want you to run it, okay? And I throw it right back to him. And boy, Max came out and can testify. The only thing we had good is Max did his skinny man skit thing, you know. And that was the only thing is even worth going to. Oh, it was horrible. And then Max spoke that night. It was tremendous. It was so bad that Pete Perkins and Dave and a couple of the guys just went down to the gym late at night and got a basketball and just played basketball for about 2 hours trying to forget it. No, I just let the guy fail, you know. I could see it coming. And I could have stepped in. I said, listen, Mark, I can tell right now it's not going to succeed. Forget it. And I said, okay, Pete, Dave, let's get together. And we could have whipped something up in the last few days and made that thing go. I just chose to let her go. It wasn't critical. Nobody, you know, it wasn't a rip-roaring success. We could have had a lot of fun had it really gone over, like the one the year before. I had a blast the year before. But I just let him go. Let him fail. He could have learned a fantastic lesson out of it. He could have said, boy, I need help. But instead he got bitter. And blamed others for his failure. Well, shall we take a break? You know, gang, one of the things I pray, and I really prayed this, and I laid in that bed this afternoon. I really appreciate the nap, too, and boy, that felt good. And I really appreciate you guys cleaning the hall, you know, the dorm and everything. I didn't hear a sound. I guess you were over there someplace, but I really appreciate your, you know, being considerate and all this type of thing. And I was laying in bed this afternoon, about to go to sleep, and I says, oh, God, the thing I'm really concerned about here is that this not just be some more words and entertaining and a few little stories and illustrations and things like this, and these people go away basically the same people. I said, God, I just can't tell you how that I dread that. But Lord, I pray that these people, that, you know, they're learning and they're thinking through on some of these concepts and they're making applications and they're different people. Oh, and I pray, oh, God, I have this group. I pray you'd raise some people up that could just go all in the world and be productive for the rest of their life. And gang, I'd really like, that's what I'm really desirous for you guys, that you become such people, that your heart for God, your devotional life, your skill, your alertness, the fact that you're a disciple, a learner, your development, your mindset, your concept of God, and all this, you just become a man of God that, you know, and my kids will read books about you, this type of thing. My kid, you know, when he's 35 years old, he picks up a book and he reads about, oh, you know, Joe, you know, what's his name? He's over in Bermuda. Man, the work of God that he did over there. And he reads about you. Man, I would love to see that happen.